This is Bob Moscherati again, starting the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, June 15th, 2016. We'll start with the obituaries. First, we have from Decatur, Ronald Eccles, 69, Decatur, Illinois, passed away at 4:15 p.m. on Tuesday, June 7th, at the Decatur Rehab and Health Care Center. Memorials can be made in Ron's name to Decatur Rehab and Health Care Center, 136 Dipper Lane, Decatur, Illinois, 62522. Next, we have Paul E. Jones. Paul E. Jones, 79, of Decatur, died Sunday, June 12, 2016, in the Decatur Memorial Hospital. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. Thursday, June 16th at Harvest Christian Center. Visitation will be 1 hour before the service in the church. Burial will be in the Bowling Springs Cemetery in lieu of flowers. Memorial contributions would be appreciated to Harvest Christian Center. Tongass Logan Funeral Services in charge of the arrangements. Next is Malvina Louisa Knott from Decatur. Malvina Melba Louisa Booth Knott went to her eternal rest at 1 p.m. on Sunday, June 12, 2016. She is at peace in her Savior's arm. She was born in Chester. He was born to Chester and Letty Booth on March 14, 1930, in Hamburg, Illinois. She grew up as the foster daughter of Reverend William and Sophie Schultz. Reverend Schultz was the first pastor at St. John's Lutheran Church in Campsville, Illinois. Memorials may be made to Missions Fund at Bethel Assembly of God, Temple, Texas. Visitation will be in Temple, Texas at the Scario Harper Funeral Home. The next obituary, Donald E. Cull, Shelbyville. Donald E. Cull, 91, of Shelbyville, passed away Sunday, June 12th at Shelby Memorial Hospital at 11:35 p.m. He was employed by the Federal Home Loan Bank Board as a savings and loan examiner, retiring in 1988. Visitation will be Thursday, June 16th from 11 a.m. until the time of service at 1 p.m. at Lockhart Green Funeral Home, Shelbyville, and burial will be in the Glenwood Cemetery. Memorials may be made to St. Paul Lutheran Church, Shelbyville. Also, we have Wallace R. Laurie. Wallace R. Laurie of Decatur passed away at home on June 11, 2016, 4 days shy of his 96th birthday. A memorial service to celebrate Wallace's life will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 18th, at the First Congregational Church of Christ, Decatur, Illinois. Dawson and Wyckoff West Wood Street Funeral Home is assisting all the family with arrangements. Memorial contributions may be directed to Decatur Memorial Hospital. Mr. Laurie was employed by Caterpillar Tractor Company after attending college for 34 years, where he spent as an auditor, and he spent most of the time in International Auditing Division. Gertrude Trudy Elizabeth Reed, 77, of Decatur, passed away Sunday, June 12, 2016, at Decatur Memorial Hospital with her family by her side. She was born August 31, 1938, in Decatur. She worked for the post office in Warrensburg. Later, she co-owned Olive's Garden of Angels Inspiration Gift Shop. Funeral services will be held to celebrate her life. Will be at 10 a.m. Friday, June 17th at New Beginnings Church of God. Visitation will be from 5 to 8 p.m. Thursday, June 16th. Burial will be in the Graceland Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, 501 St. Jude Place, Memphis, Tennessee. Also, Donald K. Wade, 80, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away 5 a.m. Monday, June 13th at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, June 18th at Brittlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, Illinois, with visitation 5 to 7, Friday, June 17th at the funeral home. Burial will be in the Bowling Springs Cemetery, Decatur. Memorials may be made to Holy Cross Lutheran Church or the Decatur Memorial Hospital Hospice. He was employed for 40 years with Illinois Power, was a Boy Scout leader, member of Stephen Decatur Booster Club, and the Decatur Lodge of Elks. The family would like to give heartfelt thanks to Dr. Carruz and staff at the Cancer Center, Decatur Memorial Hospital, and Floor 5100 for their wonderful care and compassion. Now we will go to the local page of the Decatur paper. First article, Valdez RCC President Candidate Highlights Past Successes. Cristobal Valdez credits his wife Robin with a lot of patience for following him around the country as he has sought administrative positions in academia. Now he said they are looking for a home and both would like to return to the Midwest. I think Richland Community College could be that, Valdez said at a public forum on Tuesday at the Decatur Club where community members would meet him and ask questions. Valdez is one of two finalists for the position at Richland, filling the shoes of Gail Saunders, who retired on February 29th. The other finalist, Melissa D. DiNardo, will be at the Decatur Club today beginning at 4:30 p.m. for a similar forum, after spending the day at the college meeting staff and faculty. The third candidate withdrew. The Board of Trustees will meet early morning on Friday to discuss the candidate and possibly come to a decision, said Board Chairman Bruce Campbell. If they decide on one of the candidates at that meeting, and if the candidate accepts the trustees will begin contract negotiations in the hope that they'll have a final product to present at the July meeting. A native of Montana, Valdez has served as president of the Central Wyoming College since July 2014, and prior to that was the president of Edison Community College in Ohio. He and his wife have four children, the eldest in college, the rest in the middle and high school. One thing about community colleges is their ability to provide an outlet for people to realize their dreams, he said. Community colleges always say we're the best kept secret in town, Valdez said. It shouldn't be a secret. Richland has many of the initiatives and programs that are very successful in his Ohio college, he said, such as working with area businesses to ensure that they have well-trained workforce. He has been involved with dual credit programs in Ohio and Wyoming and has experience with the agribusiness industry. Central Wyoming College has been seen substantial growth in philanthropic giving under his leadership, with a $5.25 million gift to fund an agricultural and animal science center, a grant funding increase of $2.5 million, and the college's foundation assets have risen to $20 million, the highest in the college's history. Several times on Tuesday, he mentioned transparency, something he said should be practiced internally and externally to provide employees and the community with confidence in and information on college operations. Too many times, folks just don't feel they've been heard. While he acknowledged the challenge Richland Richland and other colleges face due to the budget impasse in Springfield, he said the college's goals and needs are a good fit for his skills. The Decatur Public Library is set to reopen for its normal hours today after closing at noon Tuesday because of an air conditioning breakdown. City Librarian Rick Meyer said the system likely stopped working sometime over the weekend. The decision was made to close early Tuesday for safety reasons. We have a substantial number of patrons who are elderly and little kids, and they're the most vulnerable to these kinds of problems. We also have some staff members that are older, he said. We've been finding a number of patrons complaints today, understandably, and in consultation with a board officer, we just decided to shorten the day. There is good news for the library officials, however. Repair and maintenance of the aging library building, including problems such as broken air conditioning, are no longer their financial responsibility. The city assumed control of the facility at 130 North Franklin Street in Maine. Library leaders began looking for new ownership for the building several years ago, fearing that their budget could not sustain the building's future capital needs. Meyer said the transition has gone very smoothly. We never expected the problem to go away, he said. We just needed assistance in taking care of those, and that's what's going on. Another piece of good news, the library's collection of historical materials, which are sensitive to humidity, are safe from the sweltering heat. The local history room has its own heating and cooling system, archivist Becky Dampst said. Meyer said the servers are also kept in the cool room, and library materials are unlikely to be affected by exposure to heat for a relatively short amount of time. It's an inconvenience, Meyer said. I hate after just increasing the hours to give patrons more opportunities to come here to limit those, but back to normal tomorrow. Fleeing suspect takes son for a ride in Decatur. Police allege a Decatur drug deal fled from a traffic stop Monday afternoon with his 14-year-old son in the car and at one point had the boy bail out and make a run for it while clutching a bag of drugs and a stolen handgun. The incident began in the 1200 block of North Edward Street, and officers quickly caught the child and later arrested his 33-year-old father, Bernard F. Norvell, after he abandoned the car. Tracing the boy's route, police claim they recovered a stolen 9mm handgun that had been tossed in the backyard of a house in the 400 block of West Division Street. The bag the boy was allegedly carrying was found in another yard and contained 32 grams of cocaine and 84 tablets of alprazolam, a prescription drug. Questioned later by detectives, the boy alleged that the bag with the drugs belonged to his father. The juvenile stated that he ran with the gun in the bag in an attempt to keep him and his father from getting in trouble, the police said in a sworn statement. The juvenile stated that he did not know who the gun belonged to, but he had observed it in the vehicle, so he took it as he fled. The father, who police say was supposed to be looking after his son at the time, denied driving the car and allegedly said he had nothing to do with his son running from police. Bernard F. Norvell did state he is 33 and has never had a job in his life, the statement added. He stated he sells cannabis for his income. Norvell now faces charges of armed violence and contributing to the delinquency. A few briefs from the paper for Wednesday, June 15th. Juvenile justice event. Former Chicago gang member Eddie Bosanegra, who was the focus of a 2011 documentary, The Interrupters, will be a keynote speaker at a third annual forum on juvenile justice issues from 9 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. on Friday, June 17th at the Eisenhower High School, 1200 South 16th Street. Crossroads for the Change, Build, Prevent, Restore will include a continental breakfast, lunch, and breakout sessions on such topics as adverse childhood experiences, juvenile mental health, and teen court. Visit www.maconcofcorg and click the links and resources to register. The event is sponsored by the Macon County Juvenile Justice Council. Questions about registration should be emailed to A. Graham, that's A-G-R-A-H-A-M, at sa-macon-il.us. Next article, Decatur, a computer theft. Police arrested a 12-year-old Decatur boy and charged him with stealing and selling his grandmother's computer so he could buy marijuana. Police reports say the child lives with his grandmother and took the computer from her home Friday night. The computer is valued at more than $600. The next article, a brief St. Louis Zoo trip. The Macon County Conservation District is hosting a trip to the St. Louis Zoo from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Sunday, June 19th. The trip is open to all ages and is $20 per person, which covers transportation and parking. Admission to the zoo is free, but some special shows have fees. The trip will depart from Rock Springs National Center. Pre-register online by noon on Friday, June 17th. Then Farmer City, man dies in a crash. A 45-year-old Kentucky man died early Tuesday in a single vehicle accident on Interstate 74 near Farmer City, the DeWitt County Coroner's Office said. Preliminary autopsy report indicate that Grant A. Bennett, 45, of Bowling Green, died of multiple blunt injuries. Coroner Randall J. Rice said in a news release. The accident occurred near mile marker 160, said Rice, whose office is investigating the accident with the Illinois State Police. The man died at 6:31 a.m., said Rice. State Police declined to release any information. 3D archery. Anyone age 10 and older can take aim at 3D archery targets during a 3D animal archery at Rock Springs Conservation Area from 5 to 7 p.m. Saturday, June 18th. Rotate through lifelike targets featuring deers, bears, turkey, and more. All equipment will be provided, though you are welcome to bring your own. Basic instruction is provided for new or less experienced archers. Participants will meet at Homestead Prairie Farm in Rock Springs Conservation Area. The cost is $7 per person. Pre-register online by noon Friday, June 17th at www.maconcounty.conse, which ends in C-O-N-S-E. That's Macon County, C-O-N-S-E. In Paris, Illinois, pickup semi collide. A pickup truck driver died as a result of a head-on collision with a semi-trailer Tuesday morning on Illinois 1 south of Paris. An Illinois State Police news release reported that the pickup driver was traveling southbound on Illinois 1 approximately a half mile south of Edgar County Road 550 North when the collision occurred at 9:15 a.m. The pickup appeared to have traveled into the northbound lane for an unknown reason into the path of the northbound semi-trailer, state police reported. The semi-trailer appeared to have slowed down and moved on to the right shoulder of the northbound lane. State police reported that the pickup driver died at the scene. The semi-trailer driver was taken by helicopter to an area hospital for treatment of injuries. The names of the two drivers haven't been released. The crash is still under investigation. Indicator, yoga at the zoo. Instructors from Yoga at Connie's will lead the first yoga at Scoville Zoo event from 9 to 10 a.m. Saturday, June 18th. There is no entry fee, but donations will go to the zoo. Participants should bring water and a yoga mat. Children must attend with an adult. The event is meant to raise money and awareness for the plight of endangered species. Organizers say it is appropriate for anyone who enjoys yoga or wants to try it, from beginners to experts. Also from Decatur, road to be closed. Culvert replacement will cause 3500 East Green Hill Road between South 37th Street and Sadowski Court to be closed today from 7 a.m. to about 2:30 p.m., weather permitting. And another brief from Decatur, Kids Fishing Day. The Decatur chapter at the Isaac Walton League of American, a nonprofit conservation organization, is hosting a Kids Fishing Day event from 9 a.m. to noon Saturday, June 18th on Lake Decatur. The event will be held at Isaac Walton League Campground at 3057 Sangamon Road near Reese Bridge Road. Fishing gear and bait will be provided. A hot dog and chip lunch will be served at noon. There will be a falcon presentation at 1 p.m. For more information, call 217-428-6403 or 217-875-3322. Again, that's 428-6403 or 875-3322. Now, from the opinion page of the Decatur June 16th paper, number one, a columnist editorial, ban all assault weapons. Washington, the only reasonable response to the massacre in Orlando is to ban the sale of military-style assault weapons. All else, I'm afraid, is just noise. If this is ensconces me in an ideological corner, I'm fine with it. If it insults the Constitution, so be it. Any other response would do far greater harm to our freedoms, or we would argue for a while and then do nothing. We've tried that course of action many times, and it doesn't work. An Islamic State sympathizer was able to go into a gun store days or weeks ago and buy both a pistol and an AR-15-style semi-automatic assault rifle, which he used to kill 49 men and women at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. Had he been armed with a pistol alone, he still would have killed people, but not so many. Keeping military-grade combat weapons out of the hands of maniacs should not be controversial idea. The Second Amendment enshrines the rights to keep and bear arms, and the Supreme Court has ruled that this is an individual right, not a collective one. The court has made clear, however, that this does not preclude reasonable gun control measures. Not all weapons must be considered suitable for private hands. When the framers wrote of arms, they were thinking about muskets and single-shot pistols. They could not foresee modern rifles or high-capacity magazines. They lived at a time when it was impossible to imagine one man barging into a crowded room and killing more than one or two people before having to reload and surely being subdued. Today is not only imaginable, but tragically commonplace. No hunter needs an AR-15 to break down a deer. None of us needs a weapon to defend our families against intruders. Such a weapon, I would say. None of us needs such a weapon to defend our families against intruders. And for those who believe assault rifles offer protection against a hypothetical tyrannical government, or who permits, perhaps considers the present governor a tyranny, I have sobering news. If and when the black helicopters come, they will be accompanied by tanks. Why focus exclusively on the guns? Because other proposed solutions would violate the letter in the spirit of the Constitution and surely wouldn't work anyway. One of the presidential candidates, I don't want to sully the column with his name, has suggested a ban on Muslim immigration. The idea would be laughable if it were so dangerously un-American. First, it would be useless. The Orlando murderer, I don't want to use his name either, was born not overseas but in New York, just like the presidential candidate in question. And in the San Bernardino killing spree, also inspired by the Islamic State, the wife was an immigrant, but the husband was born in the United States. The self-radicalization of America's citizens is not going to be solved by banning all believers in Islam from entry, which would be impossible, of course. I suppose immigration officers could ask every foreign visitor whether he or she is Muslim, but then what? If the answer is no, wave them through. Stop them for further questioning if they look Muslim, whatever that means. Don't that you think Islamic State operatives might be smart enough to have Bibles in their carry-ons rather than Qurans? Attempting such a prohibition would also be obscene in a nation that enshrines religious freedom in the First Amendment. Enough said about this loathsome idea. Another possible response would involve more vigilant surveillance. The Orlando shooter had been interviewed by the FBI at least twice because of an alleged extremist leanings or connections. He was apparently on a terrorism watch list for a time, but he was removed after authorities decided there were no need to keep him under suspicion. By all means, Congress should immediately ban gun sales to anyone on such a watch list, but that wouldn't help in Orlando. No level of surveillance, near remotely possible under the Constitution, would allow authorities to detect all instances of self-radicalization and act on them. We put people in jail for what they do, not what they think. Should there be a universal background checks for gun purchase? Yes, of course. But the Orlando killer passed a background check. It is possible to have a free society without the presumption of innocence. Freedom is possible, however, without the right to buy military weapons designed for killing sprees. Banning them would not end mass killings, but it would mean fewer deaths. If we do not act, the blood of future victims will be all on our hands. The next editorial, a tough but correct call in the Ware case. A Cook County judge made the right decision last week to keep Amanda Ware's youngest child as a ward of the state's for at least another 6 months. He stopped short of terminating Ware's parental rights, although that's an eventual possibility. Those who remember what happened to Ware's three older children probably think that is the best decision in this contentious custody case. According to the Chicago Tribune, whose reporter was in court Friday when the ruling was announced, Judge Demetrius Kotaras said his court is looking out for the interest of her three children, and their future cannot and will not be on blinders. It was welcome news who remember Ware as Amanda Ham, whose other children drowned in 2003 when their family's car sank in Clinton Lake. Ham's then-boyfriend was convicted of their murders after a separate trial. Ham was acquitted of murder charges, but convicted of child endangerment. After prison, she moved to Chicago. That That will be the end of our reading of Decatur Herald and Review, June 16th, 2015. 16. This is Bob signing out.